Everybody here is out of sight. But they don't bark and they don't bite. They keep things loose, they keep things alive.
The West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, coming to you on Monday night. On the other side of the line, we have Brawley Darvin in St. Louis. What's up, my man?
Well, what do you think about that? I wish we could have recorded right after the game, but I'm like speechless. I don't even know what to say. I'm just so happy with what transpired yesterday.
You had 2 days to prepare for the podcast, and my man is still speechless. Coming into the start of this podcast. I mean, what a result that was. I thought from the get-go that we were going to get smashed around, and we did. And, I mean, we'll get into the game in a minute, but wow, what a way to start the podcast, and I'm excited to be back, especially after the way that game ended.
Well, yeah, for sure. We had the international break in between the, what was it, the Leicester game and this game, which we were finally coming into form, and we just had the momentum taken out of our sails, it felt like, and then we go into the Spurs game, we go 3-0 down, and then what transpired is something that I've never seen before, and obviously it's never happened in the history of the Premier League, so that's it's quite the accomplishment what West Ham pulled off against Spurs the other night. And I just want to bash anyone who's saying we're celebrating a draw like we won the World Cup. I mean, any team in world football would be celebrating that result as if they won the game if they were in our shoes. I guarantee it. So I'm sick of people, and it's not even other fans' clubs. It's mainly just Spurs fans trying to take the piss out of us to make them feel better about themselves. But I'm telling you, they would have been celebrating just as much had they scored 3 goals in the final 9 minutes of the game to snatch a draw.
Listen, I'll celebrate a draw at Spurs Way regardless, even if it's 1-1. I don't care. I don't care if that makes us look small or whatever. That's a massive result. So to come back from 3-0 down, yeah. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, that they're a side with much more quality. Let's just call it is what it is. I know they're a rival. I know they're a London club, but they're a much better side and bigger club than we are at this point. Let's be honest. It's right. True. So to come back from 3-0 down, even to come back and steal a point there regardless, but to come back from 3-0 down, 81st minute, wow. Plenty to celebrate.
Oh, absolutely. It's no small feat what West Ham United accomplished. So I got to watch at the Amsterdam Tavern in St. Louis with about 15 Spurs fans, and they were all giving it the big in at 3-0 up,
Feisty? Did it get feisty?
No,
in the end,
not at all.
Or was it just everybody was chill, like, yo, good game, like all that?
Yeah, no, it was friendly at the bar, and they were, you know, talking amongst themselves. It wasn't directed at me or my dad or any of the other West Ham fans in the bar, but you could tell they were all about the Spurs wankfest and the Gareth Bale wankfest whenever they were 3-0 up. And then to just hear them go deathly silent when we scored the first one, the second one, and the third one. I've never celebrated an equalizer like that in my life, I don't think. I had no voice leaving the bar. I'm surprised I have a voice today, honestly. But it was, again, I'm still...
Did you guys practice good social distancing at the bar?
We did actually, yeah. No, it was, it was, and it was outside on the patio, too. So I don't want anyone thinking we were irresponsible. But we were following all state laws and local guidelines recommended by the CDC. Just to throw that out there.
My experience of the game was the complete opposite of yours. So I watched the first maybe 15 minutes or so, saw us go 2-0 down, threw it on the radio while I was driving in my car because I had a prior commitment at that time because obviously I made that commitment before. Sky moved the game, blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, I get out of my appointment and we drew 3-3. I woke, got back to maybe 75 notifications in one of our group chats, another 30 in another group chat. plenty of notifications from Font Mob on the phone, people texting me. I mean, it was crazy, and I missed just an unbelievable result. So luckily I got to watch the highlights. I didn't get to enjoy Lanzini's banger live, but the first time I saw it, I watched it over and over again at least 20 times. I'm not even kidding. At least 20 times.
Oh, I've seen it at least 50 times since then. And I was actually, I'm not going to lie to anyone here. I was ready to go home. I make the 40-minute drive into St. Louis for these games when I go to the pub, and I was ready to go.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Just so everyone understands, people typically take 40 minutes to go to the game. Brawley drives 40 minutes to go watch in a pub. So just keep that in mind for like how much effort that is.
Yeah.
Like true. I drive a total of 0 minutes and lay in bed. So good on you for getting out and going to the pub.
Yeah. And I was ready to go home after Kane scored that third goal. I mean, I was done. I had seen enough, and my dad said, no, we're staying. And I was in my negative Nelly mood and didn't want to hear it. And to put some perspective into it, the night before, I drove down to Louisville, Kentucky to watch St. Louis FC play in what turned out to be their last ever game in existence. Made the 4-hour drive to Louisville, drove back that night. I was tired. I got back at 2 a.m. The game was at 10:30 a.m. I mean, I was running on 5-6 hours sleep, which is a good amount anyway. They lost that game 2-0. I was heartbroken, and we lost on two phantom offside calls. We scored two legitimate goals, and both got ruled out for offside. And I won't go into that because people don't really care about St. Louis FC. But that turned out to be our last ever game, so I was very upset.
So then, see your team get smashed about in the first 18 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. In typical West Ham fashion, we go down 3-0, and I was ready to jump off a bridge at that point. So to wrap it up, I'm thankful I stayed the full 90 minutes, and I have to give credit to my dad for making me stay, because I was all in on driving 40 minutes home to not watch the game.
So let's get into the actual game itself. Or the pre, where we usually start when we dissect the game. What did you think of the lineup when it first came out? Because I was a bit skeptical of the bench. I saw how many defenders on there. No Allaire. It was weird. No more Anderson. Obviously, he's gone. Our two of our signings were not eligible, Dawson and Benrahma.
Yep.
So where it felt like lack of depth. I apologize for stumbling.
No, yeah, it you know, the lineup I was fine with, because it's the same exact team that beat Leicester 3-0, so, you know, they say never change a winning lineup, right? I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, but I was fine with it. The bench, the biggest surprise was no Haller. Like, why on earth wasn't he in there? Turns out Exa said that it was just a precaution, that he picked up a groin injury or something along those lines in training, and they just didn't want to risk him, so they didn't. So that's understandable, but that left us with zero forwards, or zero strikers, I should say, on the bench. Exactly. And so I was a little concerned with that, but overall, I was really, really, really pleased not to see Gareth Bale starting for Spurs. I will say that. I just felt like it was destiny that he would score a 40-yard banger against us, and then inevitably comes on with a free kick late in the game, 3-0 up, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. He better not score this.
Yeah, he had a few opportunities to seal it off, especially that breakaway when Yarmolenko tracked back and didn't really make a full defensive play to get a touch or anything, but definitely put the pressure on him, and frankly, he just missed it.
Oh, so, make no mistake about it. Yarmolenko put him off from scoring that. Absolutely. I give full credit to Yarmolenko, because if he doesn't come, and some would even argue that it was a foul, because it was just a shove. And I think he got the ball away before he did the full shove, but he put him off enough to
put the pressure on him.
And yeah, exactly. He made it difficult for him to score. So I have full credit to Yarmo for that defensive stop there.
Still, somebody of his quality should have finished that, and he didn't. So, which pretty much gave us the opportunity to equalize. I don't really want to talk too much about their goals. It wasn't really too much to speak about, other than I think Cresswell got exposed on the one Harry Kane header, I just wanted to point out the way that he ran the channels there to get in between Ogbonna, and then we saw the deficiency of having a left back play center back, which was a height situation.
Yeah. If you're Fabian or Fabian Balbuena for Sons first, you cannot show him inside there. Keep him outside where you know he's not going to be able to curl one in. At least make him go for power at the near post if you're going to make him do anything. But instead, you show him inside. You give him a good 2 yards inside for him to just curl it in the far corner. That's defending 101. That's knowing who you're coming up against. That's knowing the guy that's running at you. At least he made up for it later in the game. But still, you can't let Heung-min Son cut inside on his right like that. You just can't do it. That's basic defending and basic watching film and tape and knowing who you're going up against. You don't even have to watch tape to know that Son cuts in on his right and that's where his favorable position is. So
Harry Kane's other goal pretty much was he created about 2 yards of space.
And he megged Declan Rice. It was filthy. Just made it happen. That's an absolutely filthy goal that had we not come back and drawn the game that everyone would be talking about today. I'm sure at the next England training session, Kane will be absolutely giving it to Deckers, making just giving him all sorts of shit for getting nutmegged there for the goal. But what can you say? It's just a fantastic finish, great goal, and I was ready again to throw myself off a bridge after that. Both of Kane's goals went in.
Well, yeah, I went to my appointment and I was very, very concerned. 3-0 down, I was like, this is ridiculous, and I gave up. I'm not even gonna lie, I did give up, and I hate even saying that, but I also don't want to be a liar and say, oh yeah, I had faith the whole time. No, I lost faith. I went away and said to myself, you know, at least I'm not gonna miss anything. Glad I didn't shut my phone off and record the game and come back to it later. And then, like I said, next thing you know, it's 3-3 when I come back. So ain't that something?
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, you know, we're going into the 70th minute. Bale comes on, and you're thinking the worst. Balbuena gets the his first goal, and then I was thinking it was just a consolation. And I think even Peter Drury,
the
commentator, said that it was a consolation, too little, too late. I think was his exact words. So foul. I keep wanting to say coup foul, and I know it's so foul. So foul with a fantastic run from the right wing back position. It's exactly what we've been lacking at a right wing back. Someone darting in, which, to be fair, Fredericks does do this, but usually his end product is crap when he's going full speed. So yep. Foul at full speed puts in a dangerous ball into the box. Put balls in the area, good things will happen. You know, that's what they say in hockey. Put pucks on net, good things will happen. If you put balls at the net or in the 18-yard box, anything can happen. And sure enough, we get lucky with the own goal, and that really, really gave us life. That's when I started to believe, like, holy shit, we might be able to get something from this game. We had 5 minutes left at that point, and it was reminiscent of the Spurs game last season when they went 3-0 up, and we got two late ones back, and we made it 3-2. I thought that was what was going to happen. But the difference between that game and this game, we had 10 more minutes compared to last game where it was like the 96th minute we scored that second goal. So I thought, you know, let's have this. Let's attack. They're scared. They're playing scared. And thank God we did, because, I mean, that third goal, I mean, what can you say about that? That's the goal of the season so far.
Oh, absolutely. And he hit it on the one and – like sliced it, it came across the ball.
Outside of his foot, yeah.
I'm speechless. It's not like he went laces. It's not like he curled it in. He literally sliced across the ball and made that thing move. That just up into the top corner. It was just craziness. Lanzini!
Oh, it's incredible! What a goal from Manuel Lanzini! And the most unlikely of comebacks from West Ham.
I saw it, and
has happened!
I can see it live. So I just said, hold on a minute, and just replayed it like 20 times. My jaw was on the floor.
It was one of those goals where, you know, you've seen celebrations across all of, you know, the West Ham fans in different bars and stuff and watching their reaction to the goal. It was one of those goals where a lot like Andy Carroll's goal against Crystal Palace, where you saw it live, but you really didn't comprehend what happened. So when you see the replay, you're just like, oh my God, how did he do that? Like, I had to see the replay, and then you almost celebrate again once you see the replay at how wonderful and spectacular that goal was. And, you know, I didn't want to see Lanzini come on. I mean, I've written Lanzini off. I wanted him gone. And to see David Moyes bring him on, it's like, man, like,
this is what we got.
But I
really
guess, like,
type of situation.
Who else are you going to bring on besides who you brought on? Yarmolenko, Snodgrass, and Lanzini.
Randolph.
I mean, he's going to bring
on Randolph.
Right. Like, as you said earlier, we don't have a lot of depth back there right now. So I guess those are the three subs you had to make. But, I mean, what can you say? Lanzini, I mean, I don't know. The 2 years of you not doing anything is all forgotten after that. I promise you.
That result was massive. And everything about this result, the last 2 weeks and the Arsenal game, frustrate me more than anything about that Newcastle game. What we've seen from this team in the last four games was nowhere even close to that first game. The energy levels, the attention to details, the strive for excellence, the passion. This team looked disaster the first 20 minutes of this game. The difference from that I've seen over the last few weeks is they just let it roll. They were like, all right, well, we still got another 70 minutes to play, and there's time to make things happen. And sure, that they only did it in the last 10, but they made things happen. They didn't stop. How many West Ham teams, Brawley, have you watched that just were like, ah, fuck it, we're done. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Let's give up.
I don't know that I've – I think – I want to say back in – I don't remember what year it was, but I think West Brom went 3-0 up on us, and we came back and drew 3-3. That's the only other time I've ever seen West Ham come from three goals behind to get a point. Because most of the time, it's a death sentence, and we give up, heads drop, and we don't really care. We're just going through the motions to get through the game and go home with our tails between our legs. But these guys...
That Arsenal 3-3 game, was that... Were we 3-1 down for that one?
It was 2-0. I think it was 2-0, and then Andy Carroll scored back-to-back goals, and then got his hat trick to go 3-2 up, and then Ozil scored to make it 3-3.
Sorry, anyway, go ahead. You were saying pretty much along the lines of it's a different team.
Yeah, I mean, we've actually got something about us these days, which I don't know if David Moyes has instilled that in us, but if he has, fair play, because under Pellegrini, that 3-0 would have been a death sentence. And for most teams, it is a death sentence. I mean, no one gave us a shot to get anything out of that game at 3-0 down. But again, we've got a bit of bottle about us. We've got something. Never say die, don't give up, and fair play, because I had written us off, and I think almost every West Ham fan besides my dad had pretty much given up.
That's very your dad, though. Have I ever met your dad in person?
I don't think he wasn't
in North Carolina.
No, I went by myself.
And the only other time we met was at Stoke away. And Arsenal way.
Yeah.
And your dad was in America, so I don't think I've ever met him. But from every story you always tell me, he just seems like the happiest man. So, like, I can see him be like, we still got this, guys. And everyone's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I was saying to him. He went over for a game with Andy, I think, 2 seasons ago, which I don't know if you were there for. I don't remember. I don't remember who it was, but he went over. He was definitely with Andy.
I wonder if I was there. I don't remember.
I don't know what game it was.
He's going to listen to the podcast. He's going to be like, oh, Tony's a dickhead.
Yeah, I don't know what game that was. But still, yeah, it was just something to behold. I can't say enough good things about the grit and the determination to come back into that game, because very easily they could have just given up and gone home.
I also, one more thing to point out about this game before we move on is what it means for the table. So that kept us in ninth, barring any other fixtures the rest of the weekend or the people who only have played four. But we're right in the thick of it, and I did not expect us to be at all, especially after that Newcastle game, like I said. The fight back against playing well against Arsenal, even though we didn't do the business there, but then getting the two wins in a row and now this fight back draw. That puts us on 7 points, right in the middle. A point off Chelsea, a point off Spurs, 2 points off fifth. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen or not, because we still have two more extremely tough fixtures coming up. Things, results typically even out. But I will say this is boding pretty well for my top 10 prediction that everybody, you, X, and Dave all gave me shit for. So go fuck yourselves.
It is early, early days, but yes, you are looking very, I don't want to say
sturdy.
It's so far so good for you. And I will say, we don't look like, for the first 70 minutes of that game, we looked like a team that would finish in 16th place. But that last 10 minutes showed that they do have something about them. And if you would have said to me that we would get 7 points from Wolves, Leicester, and Spurs, I would have laughed in your face. So that's pretty remarkable that we've accomplished that, and nearly, and we should have won against Arsenal too. So yeah, it's a bonkers, bonkers, bonkers Premier League season so far. I mean, Everton and Aston Villa are 1 and 2 right now. I mean, that shows you how crazy it's been.
True. Next fixture is City on Saturday for our Eastern United States folks. That's a 7:30 kickoff. So yuck. Raleigh, ooh, tough one for you. 6:30, yeah. Right?
Against Man City too. I mean, that
yeah, big
just
yikes.
A disgusting fixture for picking me. That doesn't whet my appetite at all.
And they're only lost this season because they are below us. But all their results were their win. I mean, their losses was against Leicester, and their draw was against Leeds. But they handled Burnley extremely well. Beat Wolves. So, I mean, this is not a soft Manchester City team, and they're going to be looking to add 3 more points significantly against us. And then our next game after that is a Van Dijk-less Liverpool.
And hopefully no Alisson. Hopefully it's Adrian in goal too.
Yeah. So, fixtures next two, a little tough, but also you never know what may happen. I predicted us, but everybody else predicted us to take 0 points. So who knows what the next two fixtures hold. Anything else on this game before we move on?
No, yeah. I just wanted to say the last 3 times we've gone away to Man City, we have lost a combined 7-1 on aggregate. And if you include the away game thrown in there, so our last four games against Man City, we've lost by a combined 13-1 on aggregate. So, who knows? This season's been crazy. So who knows?
Not so positive.
The Man City games are always my least favorite games of the season because we usually end up losing by 4 or 5, and they are not pleasant to watch. But hopefully, this is a different team. But the prospect of getting up at 5:30 to go watch that game does not sound good at all.
You want to know something fun about the City game as well? I don't know how true this is. I mean, I'm looking at it, and I just think it's wild, and I can't believe it, but I also can. Font Mob has us the previous 23 fixtures against Manchester City.
82%.
Yep. They've won 19, we've drawn 2, and we've won 2. So 1-2 of the last 23 fixtures against City. So maybe it's time for the luck to turn.
Yeah, the last time we beat Man City was that Victor Moses game back in 2014. I think Moses and Diafrasacco scored for us that day, and what a day that was. That was just a crazy, crazy game. Or I could be wrong. Did Victor Moses score that day? I don't remember. Oh, it was Amalfitano did that day. That was at home. I'm thinking of a different game. Oh, so the last time we beat them was in 2015. That was the Diafrasacco and Victor Moses.
And 2, you were right. 2-1.
Yeah, but still.
All right, do you want to take a quick break, and then we'll get into some questions?
Okay, now we want to get to the question section of the podcast. Before we do get there, I do want to say I got to give credit to David Moyes for the substitutions. I do think he still waited too late to make the substitutions. In fact, I tweeted that he is a dinosaur of a manager and has no ability to change a game at the in like the 70th minute because he still hadn't made a single substitution, but he made me eat my words because I think all three subs who came on did something. Snodgrass, Yarmolenko, and Lanzini all had an impact on the game. So I do want to give credit to David Moyes for that, and I'm just glad my tweet didn't go off slating David Moyes. There's a few, one or two people that were giving me shit about it, but it could have gone off, and I'm glad it didn't. Anyway, the first question...
I mean, he still is a dinosaur, though.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, it worked out in this case, but there's still plenty of other issues and times where his dinosaur tactics did fail. So I do, as much as I do want to give him credit for that this time, let's also remember a lot of the other fails.
For sure. Anyway, first question here is from Tony Hatcher. Still buzzing about that comeback, but what I've been dying to ask you guys is if you've had the Ribman's food and hot sauces, and if so, how is it? He seems like a great guy. I will say I've never had it. Tony, I know you have. What do you think about the Ribman's sauces?
I think the ribs are absolutely incredible. It's more like a pulled pork sandwich is what we would call it here in America.
Yeah.
I like his sauces a lot. I order usually four or five bottles at a time because it's quite expensive to ship from England. So I would recommend just sucking it up and buying a few at a time. And then the other thing is if he has it in stock, the rib rub is delicious to do on pork butt and ribs. So I would highly recommend it. I think it's delicious. I don't mean to be disrespectful because love the guy. I don't find it spicy. However, I eat stuff that's like disgustingly spicy. So like it does not make my mouth hot at all. However, our buddy Andy will have three drops and his mouth will be on fire. So long story short, it's somewhere in between there. But other than that, flavor-wise, it's absolutely incredible. And I highly recommend anything the Ribman puts out.
Cool.
Yep. The next question is from Eric. Oh, God. What? Oh, man. I hate when y'all have names that are hard to pronounce. Eric Hegerness, and that's Eric Live Out Loud on Twitter.
Eric Live Out Loud.
Still regaining my voice after that match. With Masuaku's pace and Cresswell tucked inside of him, being able to send balls in from the left, are we unbalanced on the right with Kufau a bit slower and no strong counterpart to match Cresswell? Is this a weakness the teams will exploit? So I guess my question to you is, how do you feel about Cresswell at center back, and do you think Kufau is a little slow? But I do want to point out, I don't think Kufau was really that slow. I think he's quite explosive. But, Brawley, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I think Sofal's pace is average for a wing back. I don't think he's lightning quick. I don't think he's necessarily out of his depth slow. I would say Masuaku's faster than him, obviously, but Masuaku's got pace about him. I don't necessarily think it's something that teams will expose. I think what they will expose, and Tottenham did inside the first minute, is when Sofal is up the pitch and you're going one-on-one against Balbuena and not Ogbonna or Sofal, then that's going to be a problem. Balbuena's one-on-one defending isn't really that great. So I mean, maybe that's something they'll try to exploit, and maybe that's why we needed another center back in the window, and we got Dawson. If you believe Watford fans, Dawson is not an upgrade at all over Balbuena, but hopefully maybe he'll help that out a little bit. I don't know, but yeah, I mean maybe it's something that they will try to expose, but that's why you play five at the back so you have that extra cover back there. I don't know.
If anything, it'll push Balbuena. I think I said earlier, but I think the biggest crux of the back line is going to be the height that Cresswell. I think you have a good advantage of having two players being able to move up the pitch and intertwine between Cresswell and Masuaku, and the team can shift if they want to attack. However, I think the height advantage, or I should say disadvantage, that you get with Cresswell playing that center back on some of the marking, you'll have to make sure that you have your big boys back to defend.
The next question here is from Justin Wasik of the Chicago Hammers at @just_Wasik. And he asked, does Benrahma take Fornals' position? I say to keep the same front three for City. but I think many would say yes. So would you start Benrahma over Fornals, or do you let Benrahma on the bench for City?
I start him. I think I'll go starting him against City. I don't think you have much to lose. I don't think that we're going to get much from that fixture anyway, as we've seen by previous history and how we started against Spurs. Luckily, we came back and got it together. I have no problem giving him a run out against City, and if we lose, we lose. We already expected to lose, so I'm cool with it. I think also I would want more pace and explosiveness from Benrahma than Fornals has, because I think it's going to be a very, very counter game, because I just think the quality that City has over us. So I would like to see more pace in the side anyway, just to try and chase down balls and make things happen. So, yeah, I would say start him over Fornals against City. Nothing against Fornals. I just think the way that we match up against City doesn't favor well for him. What do you think?
And since we've recorded, we did sign Said Benrahma on what turned out to be a season-long loan from Brentford, a guy that – since last year said that would be the number one guy I would try to sign. So I was absolutely buzzing to get him.
I know you were.
I loved it. Do we need defensive cover? Yeah, probably. But if you get a chance to sign a guy like Benrahma, one of the best players in the championship, I think you got to do it. And I'm glad we got it over the line, because I can't say enough good things about him. I think he's brilliant, and I think he's going to do big, big things in the Premier League. That being said, do I start him right away against Man City? I don't know. It's hard for me to say these things. Like, if Fornals does the same amount of training and Benrahma comes in and looks really good in training, I'm not there to watch it, so I'm speculating and just guessing. If I'm the manager, do I start him against Man City and throw him into the deep end? I don't know. It's a really tough position. On the one hand, like you said, you're not expecting to get anything out of this game. So do you say, screw it, let's see what you got against the best team in the league, or one of the best teams in the league? But on the other hand, I don't know. If he only has 1 week of training under his belt, and it might be a little harsh for Fornals to drop him, I'm going to say start him on the bench and try to ease him in and maybe bring him on for 30, 40, 45 minutes tops. But again, I can see both sides of the argument, but I'm going to say start him on the bench and ease him in.
There's a lot of times though that we throw guys into the deep end. Reece Oxford against Arsenal.
Oh yeah. Ben Johnson.
Ben Johnson against City themselves.
Yeah. And Gakia twice against Liverpool.
Yeah. So, I mean, we throw guys in there. In. Yeah. So we throw guys in there against big sides and let them give it a go. So I don't see why we shouldn't do the same with Benrahma.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a fair argument. I would rather you ease your way in there. But again, if he starts against Man City, I'm going to be really excited either way.
The next question is from Merrick, which is at not Merrick on Twitter. Where do you see Benrahma fitting into the side? Do we need a formation change to get him minutes? So let's just say, for the sake of the question, Brawley, after City and Liverpool, and we start playing against sides that are about more on our level, mid-table results that we need to be getting to stay high up in the table, would you change formation to get Benrahma in there, or do you keep it the same and start benching other people?
Yeah, I don't think you can change the formation at this point, because it's been so effective. I mean, although against Spurs, scored 3 goals inside 15 minutes, but I don't think you change the formation. I think you either – it's so harsh on Fornals, because Fornals is really the only place you can throw him in there is for Fornals. I cannot drop Jared Bowen. I cannot drop Mikel Antonio. I cannot drop Declan Rice. I cannot drop Suchek. So my only other option – would be you drop Masuaku potentially and go 4 at the back, but the 5 at the back is working, so no.
I like the 5 at the back.
Yeah, it's been effective so far. So I would say no, you don't change formation, and you just make the like for like with Fornals and get him out of there, which is, again, is really harsh on Fornals, because I think he gives it 110% every game. But at the same time, I think Benrahma brings a little more electricity to a match and can take a game over a bit more than Fornals could.
The only thing I could say is if we think that we should be dominating more and do a formation change, however, I thought that we should have beat Newcastle, especially the way we've been playing, and we did the four in the back and didn't work. So I guess the three in the back is working well, and why change it? I think that he has to go leg for leg as well.
For sure. Next one here is from our good friend Dan Roberts at Roberts Daniel, and he asks, could you beat Fabian Balbuena in a foot race?
I'm so glad I was going to say I got this question, but I just jumped in anyway and took it. Because shout out to Katie Nolan. This reminds me exactly of a bit she did for the ESPN show Always Late, because they did a kicker challenge where like average people were like, yo, I could kick field goals. And then they're like, oh, really? Then come out here and do it. And it was an epic fail. So I think that when we're challenging athletes, I know it was a lighthearted question, but when people think, oh, I could do that, and then they get out there like, no, you can't. So I don't think that I could beat Balbuena in a race, even if I was like gave it 100% and he gave it 50. He's still a professional athlete.
Yeah, my fat ass would not beat Fabian Balbuena in a foot race. I appreciate the funny joke because, yeah, Balbuena is pretty slow, but I am definitely too fat for that, and I don't like running anyway, so I would lose that race 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, I'm winded walking up the stairs of the crib, so that's a no for me. Next question from Will D. DeMida. Was the grit and perseverance displayed as a reflection of a strong coaching presence or on-field leadership? That's a good question.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say, again, because I'm not in the locker room. I'm not training every day. I would like to think that David Moyes at halftime gave some sort of good team talk and then said, you got nothing to lose. Let's go out there and leave it all out there. I got to think it's a bit of both at the same time. Also, when you get that first goal, you got a little belief in you, and you just don't quit. You can't quit as a professional. So I would like to think it's a combination of the two, and hopefully Declan Rice on the pitch is as the captain, G'ing the guys up and trying to get something extra out of them, and Mark Noble from the sidelines is yelling and screaming to motivate the guys. So I'm going to go with the combination of the two.
I thought Declan Rice's post-game interview was very poised as well. So, I mean, it was a mix of excitement and poise, as I think our buddy Bradley said. So I think it does have a lot to do with it on the field to get them going. So that was exciting from Declan Rice and the capabilities he has as a leader and raw soccer talent. Next question from Tom Brooks. And I think we half mentioned it. But how many times have you watched the Lanzini goal back now?
At least 50. I will say at least 50. When I got home, I wanted to take a nap. So I laid down and I picked up my phone. And I kid you not, I watched it at least 10 times on my phone right there. Like just over and over and over again. With one with the Titanic music, one with the English commentary, one with the American commentary, one with the West Ham commentary. Like, I mean, I can't get enough of it. Like, I'll probably tonight when I go to bed, I'll probably watch it again a couple more times. I mean, hands down, goal of the season for me at this point across the Premier League. And it's just spectacular. I mean, what else can you say? It's just one of the greatest goals I've ever seen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I watched it maybe about 20, 30 times. It's incredible. I've seen it everywhere all day yesterday. At work today, it's just all over the place. Facebook, Twitter, group messages, everywhere. So I'm glad that we got the result and that it makes this week much more enjoyable.
And I've thought this immediately, but can you imagine if there were fans in that stadium and that was the end that the West Ham fans would have been in? You know, we would have been right in the right hand corner of the behind the goal. if fans were allowed in. I mean, it would have been absolute mayhem. I mean, there would have been significant injuries to fans after that goal went in. I firmly believe we would have at least 5 or 10 people going to the hospital after those celebrations.
It would take me back to watching that video. I love that video from, I know it was from across the field, but just the scenes from the Spurs Cup win at Wembley. When we beat Spurs in the Carabao Cup? That was incredible.
Yeah.
3-2 comeback.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. And yeah. And the goal, Antonio against Spurs back in 2 seasons ago when we were the first team to score. Yeah, yep. I mean, the scenes were incredible then, too. I think it just would have been really, really special. And I'm so sad. I mean, we got to get fans back in these games soon. Because
that's a good away day.
Oh, I mean, it's just so much more fun without the fans. I hope I never take for granted.
With the fans.
I hope I never take it for granted that fans are at a game ever again. Because they add something. Even if it's just on TV, they add so much to the game and to the atmosphere, and I just miss it desperately. And I've been fortunate enough over here in the States. I've gone to 6 or 7 St. Louis FC games this season, and I've traveled to 4 of them. So I mean, I'm so thankful. And if we can figure it out over here, yes, our COVID numbers are still high. But you can socially it just doesn't make sense. If you're over there, you can go to a pub or you can go to someone's, you can go to a restaurant, but you can't socially distance at an open air stadium. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And you see these pictures of these concerts and shows inside a packed theater where they're not socially distanced over there, but you can't go and distance yourself. Because it does work. I've seen it. We've been really good about socially distancing at games, and not getting too close and spacing out, and it's been really good over here. And I think it can work if you do it properly. Fans should,
someone
should
doesn't
be allowed
fuck
in.
It up for everybody else.
Yeah, but I mean you can't tell me it's healthier to go watch in a restaurant or a bar packed with 50 people in there. But you can't go to the stadium where it's open air. Like, I don't know. Like, I think you should be able, these fans have got to get back into games soon. And it's, if not, you're going to see these smaller teams start dying off. I give it, if there's no relief package for these lower league teams, you're going to start seeing them dying off very, very quickly here.
I think it's the argument of there's no way they couldn't get 10,000 people into London Stadium. Like,
even less
no
than
way.
That. Just 5,000. Get, I mean, something.
Well, I'm just saying they could easily get anywhere from 5 to 10,000 people in there, socially distanced and safe. You only go in through certain gates, so it eliminates traffic and congregation. It's just hoping that everyone's very respectful of the
gotta wear your mask
restrictions.
Yeah,
wear
your
mask.
You gotta wear
but,
your mask.
You know, anyway.
Yeah, at the games that I've been to, and I've been to 3 away games and or 4 away games since the COVID stuff has started. There are stewards making sure you have your masks on, and if you, they'll warn you once, and if you have it down again, you're kicking your ass out of the stadium. So I mean, you got to be strict about it, but there's no reason you can't get some fans into these grounds. I firmly believe it. Next question here is from Jeremiah Carson, at @jcarson_1755, good friend of the show. He says, does Lanzini earn a start now? If so, where?
No. Next question. I think that he played extremely well. I think he's going to have to embrace the super sub right now until hopefully no injuries. But if there's an injury, that's when he comes in, because he's going to be behind Fornals. He's going to be behind Benrahma. So, no, he does not deserve a start.
Yeah, I agree. And while it's really harsh, I mean, I don't know that it's harsh. He didn't do anything apart from the goal, honestly. I don't remember even seeing him touch the ball, really. I think thank you for scoring that goal, and that's something I'll always remember. But I don't think he brings enough to the table to earn a start for the next few games. And if he continues to play well off the bench, then maybe we can discuss a start down the road. But against Man City, I certainly certainly do not start him.
No. And last question is from Ward Thing on Twitter. That is our buddy Kelly. Who do you drop to fit Benrahma into the side? How can you drop anyone after the game? So we kind of already answered that. I said I would drop Fornals, and you said that you would probably start Fornals. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, and if I was dropping anyone, if I was dropping anyone, it would be Fornals. But at this particular moment against Man City, I don't think I start him, no.
Yeah, I don't have anything else here, so that about wraps it up. Thanks, Brawley, again, for doing another awesome podcast. So I think you know what time it is. Can you take us out on the on the stuff that I always mess up?
Yep, you can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can follow us, or you can follow me on Twitter at Brawley Darbin. Follow Tony at Tony Clark Dupe. And if you guys please could go leave us a 5-star rating and review, that would really help us reach more listeners. And that's all we want to do at the end of the day. One thing I do want to mention, Dave and X did reach out and asked me to plug their new platform they're going to. So the West Ham Way UK is going to Patreon. For £5 a month, that's where the podcast will be, and you'll also get a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff with Dave and X and a few other content creators, as well as they're doing some prizes and some giveaways and some other fun stuff. So if you're wanting to continue to listen to the West Ham Way show, you'll need to go to Patreon, and you will find the link on Dave and X's Twitter. Pin tweets, you can go get more information there. We will not change anything. We aren't going anywhere. Nothing will change on our end, so you don't need to go subscribe anywhere else. Just continue downloading our show as normal. But if you're wanting to go listen to the Dave and X do their show, you'll have to go subscribe to Patreon.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. I am a Patreon supporter for two other podcasts. I'm not going to act like money is easy or hard. I don't want to assume some people's lives. However, I just want to say that we really appreciate what X and Dave bring to the West Ham table. And I think it's a great amount of content, awesome podcast. And I'm not just pumping them up. I'm serious. And I think it'll be the easiest £5 or $6.50 that you spend. They work really hard for free. I would like to also add that we work really hard for free. We just don't have enough, a big enough following. So you'll still be able to get the Minor League West Ham Way podcast here. But congrats to X and Dave for doing their thing, and big shout out to them.
Yeah, I totally agree. So signing off this week, hopefully we're coming back at you next weekend after a victory against Man City with West Ham. You never, ever know. So until then, guys, we'll see you later.
We are fucking massive. Come on, you Irons.